Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's political podcast. I'm Lara Prendergast and I'm joined by Fraser Nelson and James Forsyth. So Fraser, there's this report out that suggests that Britain should allow only very limited immigration by low-skilled workers after Brexit. What do you think about that?
Well, this is the big report people have been waiting on to say, how would it look after Brexit if Britain can control its own borders? Ought, for example, it to prefer EU nationals to non-EU nationals? And the answer, I'm delighted to say, is no. One of the worst things, I think, about EU membership is the way that we're forced to discriminate against non-Europeans. We discriminate against Indians, against Chinese people, against Americans. And I've never worked out why. And of course, the reason, of course, is that we're in the EU. But it all seems to be terribly unfair. And I thought one of the great advantages of Brexit was to stop there being such a thing as a second-class immigrant and to take everybody based on their abilities and what they can bring into the country. Now, on lower-skilled migration, I have to say I'm a bit of a liberal on immigration. I'm in favour of mass immigration. The numbers coming into Britain don't particularly worry me, but those numbers are slowing for demographic reasons anyway. And the report says that we need more high-skilled immigration. That will be a help to Sajid Javid, the Home Secretary, who's having a bit of battle with Theresa May over this right now. Now, we have got a cap on people coming in the Tier 2 high-skilled immigration. We didn't really hit that cap until recently, and then we hit it several months in a row. So we're now turning back people who want to join the NHS. It just makes no sense to me at all. And Sajid was quite clever in being able to remove NHS workers from that cap. Now, they were about 40% of the people in the cap, so that, in effect, increased the number of high-skilled visas by about 40%. But the Migration Advisory Committee is making the case for going way further than that and having far more freer movement of high-skilled migrants.
I think more high-skilled immigration is sensible. I think one of the things, the Westminster debate about immigration has this kind of very binary view that the public is either for it or against it. Yeah. When I think the vast majority of voters are far more nuanced about it. I don't think there are very many voters who worry about French bankers in South Kent or American bankers in Notting Hill. There are lots of voters who worry about the kind of immigration that they perceive as putting a strain on public services or increasing wage competition at the lower end of the scale. Now, I think what the Migration Advisory Committee say essentially is, well, it's up to the government whether immigration gets chucked into the trade talks with the EU. So I think what you see is the government try and pull off a two-step. The first step will be to say, we're not going to discriminate between EU citizens and citizens from elsewhere in the world. And then the government will say, but we will talk about migration as part of the trade deals we sign.
And we'll end up giving preference or something.
Trade deal we sign will be with the EU, and it will probably be the most comprehensive trade deal we sign initially. And so therefore, there will still be some preference for EU nationals in the system, but obviously not as pronounced as it is now.
But James, won't that effectively mean, though, that there will be discrimination? You can't have a preference for EU nationals and not have discrimination against non-EU nationals.
Sure. I mean, there are two points here. One is, I think the question about is to what extent is the discrimination, right? Is there any cap at all on numbers on EU nationals?
Because right now the limits are pretty bad.
And there is a massive difference, to my mind, between saying any EU national with a job offer can come to the UK, which, given how, you know, given the nature of the modern world of work, is essentially saying anyone can come. And then there is an or between that and saying anyone with a job paying over the national average wage, for example, could come to the UK. I mean, those are two very different systems. I also think that the stuff on high-skilled immigration is entirely sensible. I mean, it has got to a situation where when this cap is hit, they just boost the wages for it. And I think by the summer, it got to something like 60,000 a year you needed to be on to come in, and that is an absurdly high figure.
And it's interesting, James, that you're saying that the public aren't as obsessed with immigration as some of the Tories think, but Theresa May herself sees it very differently. Now, I've spoken to government members who've been arguing with her behind closed doors about this immigration target, the net immigration target, which hardly anybody in the cabinet thinks is a good idea. It's to get net immigration below 100,000. There's never any chance of hitting that target. But when Theresa May faces ministers saying it's time to drop it, she always responds saying, who is speaking of the public? Where's the public's interest? Who's standing up for the ordinary voter? her implication being that all of the ordinary voters don't like immigrants and want that number down. So she's got it into her head somehow that it's her, that she's the last person in the cabinet who is talking up for the public here, and all of these kind of globalists like, you know, like Sajid Javid, who's fresh back from his merchant bank job in Singapore, and all the rest of these people, are talking in their sort of globalist way, in a way which will annoy your average voter. So this is the thing, though. I reckon that when Theresa May goes, then this reticence also goes. I can't see who's going to take her place as Prime Minister, who's going to share her view on immigration. So I think the report we've had out today will shape the next Tory leader's immigration policy.
Talking of immigration, there's also been this suggestion that Theresa May should offer free movement to US workers to help seal a transatlantic deal. Fraser, what do you make of that?
Absolutely. I think it's a wonderful idea. I mean, when you, one of the problems we've had in free movement so far is look at the economic wealth of Britain versus that of Romania. Now, if you're going to have free movement, obviously people from the poorer country are going to come to the richer country. And they've done so in numbers that the government did not anticipate. Now, compare this to the United States. And if you have free movement between those two countries, is there going to be a massive rush in either direction? Probably not. Now, free movement was set up in the EU, the idea came in the 90s, where there wasn't that much cross-border movement, not really. And then you had EU expansion, then you had the new great global wave of immigration, and then a policy set up for an era of low mobility was completely unequipped for what we've now got, an era of high mobility. But I think that Britain and America, because they're so similar economically, will be able to have a deal like that without any real practical implications, I think, for either country. And it means that James and I, if we want to go to emigrate to Texas, we might find it slightly easier to do that.
Look, this is a nice, one of these things that is a nice idea, but it ain't happening.
Why not, James? Let's burst my bubble so quickly.
Let's just be real. I mean, having kind of gone through the US immigration system, there is no way that they are. And I mean, there is also another point, which is, you know, that there is a question here, which is, you know, in the current incumbent of the White House, the idea that he's going to announce that he's throwing open the door, you know, it just...
But wouldn't he want that to balance it, thinking, okay, you Americans, you think I don't like Mexicans, but you know what, I'm going to open the door on Brits. He's got this sort of strange idea of you know, the Nordic countries are okay, for example.
I mean, there's well, let's not...
I mean, not that they're not okay, you know, but he's got the idea that, you know, they're
in Birmingham.
Yeah, but in the way that the original American, when they thought, okay, but the Nordic guys, they're fine. I mean, Trump does discriminate between countries he thinks are good and countries he once regards as, well, shitholes, to use his language.
It comes back to your point about the free movement at the beginning of the EU. When the EU was six Western European countries with a roughly similar standard of living, the free movement wasn't going to create this. It wasn't going to create the kind of movement that it has created. I think it's quite interesting that even back in the days of the coalition, even Nick Clegg in private would say, look, we can't, you know, the next time an EU member is admitted, there has to be very long transition controls, which would have to include a kind of GDP per capita test, because otherwise free movement would not be sustainable. That is the fundamental problem.
And they were all blindsided by this. I remember this pamphlet by the Centre for European Reform, which came out just after the EU accession, saying, where are all these millions of workers? It's all a joke. The right-wing press got this worked up. So people like Nick Clegg and Charles Grant of Centre for European Reform and others thought that it was all tabloid scaremongering, and they blinded themselves to the basic fact that if you do include a poorer country in a free movement bloc, of course they're going to come for the better paid jobs. Why wouldn't they?
Fraser, do you think the British public would be more open to free movement from an Anglophone country?
I don't think we necessarily see it that way. Certainly, there is something about the British identity where some people regard Australia as being closer than France, for example. That, you know, there's a notion of Commonwealth, I think, which has got more currency than people think. That I think if you were to say, let's have free movement between all countries with the Queen as head of state, I think there would be... I think that would make sense to Brits. We've always had a globalist outlook. It was one of the many great things about this country. Why I think we're the most successful melting pot in Europe. As long as the public services are looked after, as long as the housing crisis is addressed, I think that we are one of the most welcoming and most successfully integrating countries in the world. It's one of the many reasons why this is a great country to emigrate to and a great country to live and work in.
Just finally, we should talk about Vince Cable. He'll be delivering his speech this afternoon, and it's been briefed out that he's going to be talking about Brexiteers and their erotic spasm. James, what do you make of that?
I think this is a classic bit of headline chasing, you know, which is you are struggling to get any attention or cut through for your conference. So you say something that you know the phrase is going to raise an eyebrow or two and going to get repeated endlessly because of that. So I mean, that is what he is up to. But I think I think this week must have been a very depressing week for the Lib Dems. First of all, we're all, not that they're that depressed, not see us, but in a sign of a kind of lack of media interest, we're sitting here. We used to, back in the day, hold our podcast equipment off to a Lib Dem spring conference. You know, now they're holding their main autumn conference and you know, it's not troubling the scorers. I think that is concerning for them. I think it's also worrying for them that they tried to put themselves at kind of as the one political party unambiguously in favour of a second referendum and exit from Brexit, to use Cable's phrase, and that isn't delivering them the kind of electoral rewards that you would think, which does leave you wondering if the whole Lib Dem brand is just done for.
Well, Rose, in The Guardian today, Raphael Burr says that liberalism needs to be rebuilt, just not by the Lib Dems. Do you think he's got a point?
Oh, yes, he has got a point. I think the definitive piece in this was by Adrian Wooldridge in The Economist a few weeks ago about the crisis of liberalism and what's needed to rebuild it. And it does seem to be a shame that there are the Lib Dems sitting stuck in the middle with you, as they might be putting it, and nobody really wants to join them. And their joke, their line, it was perfectly logical. You know, they do have clowns to the right and jokers to the left, but nobody wants to join Vince Cable or any of his other MPs as being that sort of remedial force. So not just Raphael Baer, but lots of people quite often on Twitter will declare it's time to rebuild the centre. It never seems to happen.
Thank you, Fraser, and thank you, James. And just a reminder, there are still a few more tickets left for the Ruth Davidson event next Monday, the 24th of September. If you'd like to get a ticket, go to spectator.co.uk/Ruth. Thanks for listening.